Mr. Hutton, Reel 6. We were talking about the OP work.
Yes,
did.
I missed a bit out of that first little tale about when Bennett and had two OP officers at the OP to direct the guns all at one time, and then the OP was attacked. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't an OP. It was a forward sort of infantry thing. It's a bit of a sort of salient, I think. The guns, they brought in the guns to fire as many rounds off as they could, and that's when we had a casualty on the gun position. One of the guns had a premature, whatever it is. I don't know whether it's when they get too hot and they put a round up, and I'm not quite sure what causes a premature, but I think one of the chaps got killed on the gun position because the guns were firing so, you know.
Do you remember any other stories of your work with the, the Bren carrier?
Well, Bennett used to be often sort of...
While you were in Tobruk?
Yes, it's all whilst we were in Tobruk. There was once going to be an attack in strength one night. It was supposed to be a siege, but we were always, and especially the infantry and the Aussies, were always taking... It was supposed to be a siege, but they were always going out, and especially with the Italians, because when the things quietened down a bit, the Germans surrounded us all with Italians and went on fighting elsewhere. And we used to go out and attack the Italians, you see. Well, the infantry did, we didn't. But we used to go out in support of them. And one day there was going to be a really big do, sort of, wouldn't say it was battalion strength, but certainly company strength, of the Australian infantry.
So like a raid?
Yeah, but more than a patrol. I don't know what the reason for it was. They never used to tell you in those days. When Montgomery came, you were put more in the picture, but in those days, you weren't put in the picture. And there was going to be some tank support. So you've got to remember, all the tanks in Tobruk were pretty worn out. And... But there were this Aussie infantry, they were going to have support from them. We were going up to give them artillery support, and the tank, there were supposed to be some tanks coming. So anyway, we moved off. We moved off with the Australian infantry, and the tanks didn't seem to come. I think they all broke down coming up towards it, so we went in without any tank support. And... Jerry seemed to, or whoever it was, whether it was Jerry or Italians or what it was, they seemed to get wind of us coming, and they started letting all hell loose at us.
And you were accompanying
we seemed to be leading the Australian infantry, with Bennett, you see. And the Australian infantry started to get a bit fed up with it. They wanted to know where the tank support was, and... That couldn't seem to find any Australian officers anywhere. And it was dark, mind you, and Bennett was talking to these Aussies. And you know what the Aussies are like. They're bloody good when they're winning, but they're not so bloody good when they're losing. And they started getting bolshy, you know. I reckon they've got trade unionists in there. But... There was not, mind you, it wasn't very nice in the Bren carrier, so we'd got a bit of cover around us. There was a hell of a lot of shit flying around. And I remember he was arguing with an Australian sergeant, because these Aussies said they were buggering off, they weren't having any more of this. And Bennett says, well, where are your officers? We couldn't find any Australian officers. And all these Aussies just turned around and went home, if you know what I mean. But we were supporting other people, and so Bennett went on forward. And it seems as though everybody had turned around and come home. Well, then we got lost. We didn't, in all the heat of the battle, even Bennett, who was pretty good at finding his way around, I hadn't a clue where I was, because I can remember... There was all this shit flying around, and Bennett was standing up, and I said to him, for Christ's sake, sit down. Because if he got killed, I was definitely, I had a bloody clue where I was. But anyway, Bennett says, it got all quiet, And Bennett says, I don't know where the bloody hell we are. He says, as soon as it gets first light, I thought he knew his way around the world, you know. But he got no landmarks, and there was no moon, and it was black as buggery. You couldn't hardly see the hand in front of you. And he says, we'll have to wait till first light and make sure we're awake before the eye tides are. Mm-hmm. So we've got a long wait till dawn. Now, what was worrying me was this Bren carrier, which was about knackered, you never knew when you press the button whether it would start or not. Nothing to do with the battery. It got a cog broken on the flywheel, so that when you, and if it stopped in the wrong place and you press the button, nothing happened. You've probably had it on an old car, have you? And it's rather sort of a lazy starter or a flywheel. But anyway, there were no such things as spare parts. It couldn't be mended. So all the time I had this Bren car into Brook, I never knew whether it would start or not. And the only thing, and it had a starting handle, about as long as from here to that wall. It was about 6 foot long, this starting handle was. And you had to get out with this starting handle, and you had to thread it through about 3 holes till it got into the engine. And it's a job you couldn't do in a hurry, or if you were a bit nervous and your hands were shaking. And I used to think, then it says, well, be ready to, as soon as it's first light, we'll be off. And I lay there, sitting there, well, when it times to come to move, will the damn thing start? Or have I got to get out and put the starting handle in? Because as soon as we knew where it was, we'd got to go quick, because we were a damn sight nearer the Jerry lines than we were the high tie lines, whatever it was, than our own.
You were actually in no man's land.
No, right in the thick of it, but we didn't know which way to go. If we'd gone that way, we might have been prisoner, you see. Anyway, as soon as he could see features, it was hardly light, Bennett knew where to go. And I pressed the button, and it started, you see. And we got home. But it was... That was the most nerve-wracking part of my job, was whether the damn thing would start or not. But, later on it didn't start. I'll tell you about that one day. It was later on in Tobruk. But it was... there were all things like that, and it was time and time again. It was happening an awful lot. And other times, and it was very pleasant up there when it was quiet, because you're up with the Aussie infantry. And they used to go out on patrol every night. I used to give time, and I've been up there, and I've got a real good night. I've put pyjamas on and gone to sleep and had a nice, comfortable night. I'd wake up when the Aussie patrols used to come in. They'd go out, and I'd go to bed, and then they'd come in again. And I think I told you about Colonel Holden at the beginning, for telling us for never seen soldiers in pyjamas before.
So you, that was your job, you were the advanced OP.
Yeah.
You, the radio operator.
Yeah.
And the officer.
Often, you see, they put the OPs, would be just at an infantry post, and there'd be a telephone wire to it, which they used, you see.
So you wouldn't be there then?
No, I would be there in case we were wanted.
So you're just a backup?
We're a backup, and then of course I think Blondie Hobson was doing his stuff. But it was... It was a very exciting job, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, because I think partly, because it got... There was the troop sergeant major, a damn good troop sergeant major.
Who was that then?
Atwell. George Atwell. Now, you see, he was a Lance Bombardier or a Bombardier when we first war started. You know, I was very friendly with him. Saw a lot of him. And when he got made Battery Sergeant Major, I thought, life's going to be easy now. But it wasn't. He'd got me sussed out. He knew about all my tricks. And he'd suss me out, and when he used to come back down to the OP for a rest, he used to me, "Hey, you skiving bugger. You've been having a nice time up at the OP, now you're here." You know, he used to get me doing all sorts of jobs and make my life miserable. He'd say, "We want some volunteers, you and you, you know. Go down to Tobruk to get some ammunition." And you go down into that from our position, our gun position, there was a road down into Tobruk. And the ITIs could shell that road. They were quite good at it. And you'd have to go down in this, like, to fetch this ammunition. You'd get a few shells up your arse as you were going down there. That wasn't so bad. And then when you got to Tobruk, then you used to get dive bombed. Then you had to load up with high explosives and come back again. 10 to 1, you'd be shelled on the way back. It was no nice job going down to fetch the... It was damn sight better up at the OP, except when things got a bit hot. And
how long would you spend up at the OP at a time?
Well, you see, normally it'd go up for about a week, if I think I'm telling you right. But as we'd only got one of these things, I used to sort of keep out of George Attwell's way. I'll say, "But I'm quite happy where I am, thank you."
So you'd stay up there a lot?
Well, I used to stay up there a lot. Used to
take... Was there another driver who was meant to be up there? I mean, when you weren't?
If somebody was keen enough to go, there was... I mean, I was happy to stay, since I was looking after Ben and Slynn. I mean, this only went on for a few months, because then things got very quiet, you know.
So where would you get your rations while you were forward? Would you get it off the Australians, or...?
We'd get it off the Australians, we'd take it... You see, we did what was a lot of this vehicle rationing business. We'd always seem to got plenty in the... You'd always have plenty in your vehicle and plenty of tea and... on the whole, we did pretty well. I'm not saying the infantry did, but we did all right.
And when you were on the OP, where would you sleep? I mean, is this where...
Well, some OPs were so much better than others that... And the weather wasn't bad, you know, then.
But you would usually not be on the tower once?
No, I've never went up one of those towers.
But would you be in reserve to a tower, or would they'd be a separate thing?
No, but we'd probably be going where the towers weren't, but...
That's what I meant, yeah. Yes.
And those towers were used a lot, I think. Later on, I got jaundice and went down.
Right, we'll come back to that. I want to ask you a bit about the conditions, generally, you know, while you're at Tobruk. Did you use dugouts at all when you were back with George Attwell and the troop?
We'd got them, but I never liked to sleep inside a dugout if I could help it. Because the summer spot, a lot of them were ex-Italian dugouts and things like that, you know, stuff that had been quite well built in peacetime, but they were absolutely full of fleas and bugs.
So you still slept outside?
I slept. Whenever I could, I used to sleep outside. I used to like to sleep under my carrier.
What did you think of the food you got generally while you were at Tobruk?
I would imagine we fed... Well, it was very, very boring, I suppose. Bread was the thing you liked better... I liked better than anything else. You know, when we had bread. I'm never very fond of army biscuits. And Jerry was very, very clever. He'd always bombed the bakery. And then it'd be a week or two before they'd got it mended, the field bakery. And it seemed to be a hell of a long time before they could mend the bakery again. And as soon as they mended it, Jerry used to know and used to bomb it again. But a slice of bread was a luxury. And I think we had bully beef cooked in all sorts of different ways, tinned pilchards.
The bully beef, was that an appropriate diet for the desert, do you think?
Yes, I would imagine it's the only thing that you could eat month after month, week after week, without getting permanently sick of it. Spam, Well, you know, the American spam that we got, you could get later. You couldn't have gone on eating it like you could bully beef, and I don't...
So you didn't really get sick of bully beef, then?
No, because they could cook it in lots of different ways, and you got hungry.
Would you have it mainly cooked, or would you...
The bully beef stews, and you'd eat it out the tin. Of course, it had all gone soft and runny when it was in in hot weather.
That didn't put you off?
No, but, I mean...
Was it a bit salty?
Yes, it is salty, I would have said, yes. But I suppose that... Water was the... Food wasn't the problem, it was the water that was the problem.
So you got enough food?
Well, I did, anyway.
Were you bothered by the lack of variety? I mean, you said... Did that bother you at all?
Well, I suppose... Because, soldiers grumble, don't they? But I don't... I can't ever... There's only a few times when I ever went really hungry. Now, that doesn't apply to the infantry. I think I would have been... I don't think I should have, enjoyed the war as much if I'd been in the infantry.
So, were you still getting the odd perk from your friends?
Yes, but we'd get there and we'd get parcels, But the trouble is, when the boat mail came in, it didn't come, once a week, but once every 6 weeks or something like that, you'd get me and get it all together, so... And by the time you'd shared it with your friends... There wasn't very much.
Where would the parcels come from? I mean, who sent you them? Were they from your family?
Families and things like that.
What about organisations in Nottingham?
Oh, yes, the Comfort Fund. I used to do very well from the Nottingham Comforts Fund.
And what sort of things would be in the parcels?
Oh, just socks and soap. There might be a few sweets, I think, but it was mostly socks and soap.
So not food?
No, I don't think so. There might have been a few sweets.
Did you write home a lot? Or did you get letters?
I suppose my parents used to write to me quite a lot, but I'm afraid I didn't write. I don't expect I wrote a letter more than about once a month. I had a pen friend who was my wife. I didn't know her. She was Ken's... sister, Ken's wife's, Ken's fiance's sister. John Walker used to write to her for me. Well, I was too damn lazy, She.
You were just.
And John Walker used to write these letters for me. Ken says, you haven't got a girlfriend, why don't you write to my. She's ever so pretty. So, you write. So. Well, I didn't want to write, so John Walker wrote one in my life, and she used to send me all these. She was on the Nottingham Comforts Fund. And I used to get more than my fair share of parcels then. I bet you think I'm a bit of a rogue, but... I mean, she used to organise sending these parcels off. So I used to get a lot of these socks and shaving soap and everything that they got in the parcels fund.
So you weren't a great letter... Did you enjoy receiving letters?
Oh, yes, but I couldn't be bothered to write the damn things. I forgot half a chance. I used to write to my parents. I wrote one or two letters, but not many.
Now, what about this water problem you were telling me about? You said food...
Well, the water was very salty-tasting, brackish, and it didn't make a good cup of tea.
And, was that how you mainly drank your water ration, as tea?
Yes. Tea, and so the cook's got the biggest part of your water ration, and then you wanted something to clean your teeth with, something to wash and shave in.
And where would you get that from? How was that issued to you?
Well, we had... we used to put it in... When we had this, it must have been plenty. We had those bags on that held water, and that kept it cool because it was evaporating. I think that could have been when there was plenty. It varied in Tobruk. Sometimes it was very, very short, the water was, and sometimes it wasn't. We used to wash all the clothes in petrol. I used to wash all my clothes in petrol. Mind you, it was an easy way of doing it.
What do you mean?
Well, you just swirl it round in a bit of petrol, hang it on the barbed wire to dry, and it seemed to be fairly sweet then.
Did it cause the any rotting? Some people.
No, it made them rot. But I had a good supply of things like that, as I told you before. I'm sure it reduced the life of the shirt, but it cleaned them.
Were you expected to wash and shave? I mean, were you expected to keep clean shaven throughout?
No, that was the beauty of the OP. You could sort of start growing a beard up there. And then as soon as you got back to the gun position, old George Attrell used to make me shave it all off again.
Why was that? I mean, did he do that?
It's just to smarten me up a bit.
So you were expected to keep up standards of appearance?
To a certain extent.
What about your uniform, though? I mean, obviously you want to keep it clean because it's just better, but were you actually still wearing standard uniform then?
But at times we looked a pretty ragtag mob later on, but it depends how. When things got quiet, then they started making you smarten up. And it got really quiet, they started making you do PT and stupid things like that.
So, at the start, I mean, you hear tales of people wearing nothing but the boots, that sort of thing. Were people taking parts of their uniform off?
Yes, there's been a time the chaps would only be in shorts and boots. It was hot, and they were.
And would you do that, or?
No, I was never very fond of getting sunburned, because I was the sort of chap who went red and blistered. But some of them were. They just looked. They'd be wandering about in. Hardly anything, just a pair of little shorts and a singlet and things like that. But then you've got to remember, we'd been out there a long time and our blood was a bit thin, so when it got cold, we used to get just as cold as anybody else, and clean to put on battle dress, let alone khaki drill. It could be very cold in Tobruk.
Was that mainly in the evenings?
In the evenings, when the sun went in, it was. I'm not saying in the summer, but in the.
Towards the end of the season.
Yes.
What about the latrines? What were the latrine arrangements at Tobruk?
Well, you could sit in a row, and there were some three or four seaters, or there could be a long pole over a trench. But. A lot of us used to have a spade and dig a little hole somewhere. That's what you do. I mean, sometimes up at the OP, when things were really bad, you'd have to do it in a shovel and sling it out and then go and bury it in the dark. You know, when Jerry could see you and you could see him, then you. Then it was when things were bad, you'd do it in a shovel and throw it outside on your trench, whatever you were in, and then get up at night and bury it.
You were always expected to bury whatever you'd done.
Well, I think you would, because it would be pretty nasty. But that was more when you're actually living with the infantry and it's in a tough spot.
But you gunners had.
But it wasn't like that all the time. It wasn't like that all the time.
What about sort of the various animal life it does? You mentioned fleas, and that was that lice or sandfly or what sort of?
I think it was the sort of fleas that used to be on the Italian soldier.
They don't seem. You said that fleas liked you, but they don't seem to have lived on. The soldiers so much, or
some people they liked. Some people would have fleas crawling over them, and it just itched them. But the fleas didn't bite them, or they weren't allergic. But if a flea bit me, I used to come up with a great big bump.
Did they actually live on you? I mean, did you have lice?
No, because I never had lice. But if I had a flea, I used to, no matter where I was, I used to take my shirt off and look for it and get rid of it, because it just was one flea made me miserable. And I used to come up with great big bumps. I mean, some people just have fleas, I suspect the fleas bit them, but they weren't allergic to them.
Did the Were you treated for these lumps or?
No, just you know, as soon as you, if you'd got a flea bite and it came up in a lump, it itched you. But if you caught it and killed it, you sort of stopped itching. I mean, that's psychological, isn't it? I just.
What about desert sores? Did they develop into desert sores?
Desert sores were very bad when we were first at Merthyr Mae Trwy. But I can't remember them, whether they put something in our diet or something.
Did you get them at Mercer?
Yeah. If you've just got to sort of, if you're using a spanner and it, your hand slips and you knock your knuckle or something, you know, how you make it bleed, well, then that would turn into a desert sore.
What did they look like? I mean, were they like blisters?
It was like a scab, a small, you'd get a little scab there, wouldn't you? And it would heal in this country. But there, it would never quite heal. It'd always get pus in it, and it would never heal.
So it wasn't like a carbuncle raised?
No, it was just a, it was just like a little graze that got a scab on it, and it, but it wouldn't heal properly.
And but this wasn't so much a problem at.
I don't think it was. I can't remember being bothered. I wonder if they put something in our diet that.
Were you getting ascorbic acid tablets or?
Yes, maybe the. That would help because it's sort of wasn't that for. There was something I can't remember. The desert sores, as far as I was concerned, were bad in Mercer, but I can't really remember them being bad in Tobruk. Somebody might tell you different. I don't know whether you've noticed.
What about sandfly and sandfly fever?
Well, you get that more in Cairo and Alex. That's whenever I used to get sandfly, when I went down there, or been on leave, or been in hospital. Can't remember being bothered too much with it in the desert. I think, on the whole, the desert was quite a healthy place.
What about things like snakes or scorpions?
Well, when we first went to Palestine, we were all frightened of scorpions. We used to look in our beds, in our bedding roll, to see if you'd got a scorpion. But then after you'd been there a bit, it didn't bother you.
Were they there, or were the scorpions in?
The scorpions were there because we used to sort of sometimes catch them and put a little ring of fire around them, and they used to sting themselves to death. Cruel. They were such nasty looking things.
But they didn't. No one actually got stung by them.
I can remember there was a chap called Ernie Hurry. He was a driver. He was a driver. Drove the monkey cut, the signal, the one that used to lay the telephone wire out. One day in Tobruk, there were some centipedes, and they were about that long.
Three or four inches.
Three or four, and revolting-looking things. And one crawled up his leg. And if a centipede crawls up his, I forget where, you've got to brush him off, but you've got to brush him off the one way. I can't remember if it's this way or that way. So if you brush him the wrong way, his legs come off and stick into you. And they're poisonous. Not deadly poisonous, but they're nasty. And Ernie Hurry had one crawl up his trousers. And he tried to get rid of it quick like that. And one of these legs went in one of his balls. And it swelled up just like a rugger ball. It was big. And it was night time, and so he went to see the M.O., Finnegan. And Finnegan was ever so cross. I think he'd been having a bit to drink, and he was gone to bed. He was a bit fed up. And he wasn't very pleased with Ernie Hurry getting him up, because Ernie Hurry was very worried. He told him to bugger off and come and see him in the morning. Well, we all thought Finnegan was a bastard then, you know, a terrible, you know. Because he'd really swollen, his balls were. But next morning, when it was time to go to the MO, it had gone down again. But we did think the MO was a rotten bugger.
So that was centipedes, more than scorpions?
That was a centipede.
So the scorpions were nasty looking, but they didn't bother you?
Well, you got in the end, I think we were all frightened when we first went out, you know, but after we'd been bit. I don't expect people who live in South Africa and things like that are worried about snakes and centipedes and things. It's just when you first leave this country and go there.
You didn't see them as a threat to you?
No.
And the same with snakes. Were there any snakes in the temple?
Yes, there were snakes, but they didn't see many of them that were there. And I expect some people, I was never very observant, but and the thing about a snake is if they always get out of your way, it's only if you happen to...
Was it the same with scorpions, they'd get out of your way?
I would think a scorpion would. I mean, a scorpion couldn't do much through a boot. It's just if one had got into your bedroll...
Would you check your bedroll?
Well, we did when we first went to Palestine.
But later.
But when you've checked your bedroll every night for about a month, nothing there, you stop doing it after a bit, don't you? You do hear people. I mean, the scorpion is just nasty. I don't think it's deadly.